from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. San Francisco is defined by images, both what we see and how we'd like to be seen. Beautiful, progressive, open, exuberant, infused by all things fine. So it doesn't quite fit our image of San Francisco when we read that artists and art galleries are being forced out of the city, that the city of Lawrence Ferlinghetti, Jerry Garcia, and Jack Kerouac is now too pricey for artists to call home. Is San Francisco losing its artistic center? And if so, what does it mean for the city and how it sees itself? That's next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. It would be hard to describe San Francisco without using the word beautiful. So it seems particularly ironic that a city known for its arresting images would no longer be a place that artists can call home. And yet in recent months, there's been one story after another of artists' evictions and gallery closings in San Francisco. A city known for embracing the arts is now being embraced by the tech boom that fuels ever higher rents. Is something fundamental changing about the nature of San Francisco? Or is this only part of a long-running trend about how the city has evolved? After all, before the Castro was the Castro, it was a working-class neighborhood. So was the Haight before the hippies. This morning, as part of our Priced Out series that examines the high cost of living in San Francisco, we want to explore this question. Is San Francisco losing its artistic soul? Joining us first to talk about this, Courtney Fink. She's the executive director of Southern Exposure, a 39-year-old San Francisco-based nonprofit visual arts organization that supports emerging artists. She was also recently evicted from her apartment in the city. Courtney Fink, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks.
Happy to have you join us. Joining us, too, is Lisa Ruth Elliott, a San Francisco-based artist and community historian with Shaping San Francisco. She, too, was recently evicted from her apartment. Lisa Ruth Elliott, good morning.
Thanks for having me.
And here, too, is Anthony Luzzi. He is the president of San Francisco Art Dealers Association. Anthony, good morning as well.
Good morning, Dave. Thank you for having me.
Happy to have all of you join us. So let's begin by talking about what you think is being lost. Courtney Fink?
That's a good question. And I honestly think the conversation leaves me with more questions than answers. But, you know, living in San Francisco for 20 years and leading an important organization that supports artists, it's hard to really know what's been lost. There's so many changes. There's these eras and ups and downs. And it seems to me like when you think about what makes up a healthy art scene, what are the facets of a healthy art scene, one of the key things that's starting to be missing is affordable space. Viable space for artists and for venues to flourish. And I feel like that's the most evident thing that's really being lost when people can no longer make a home here. I really believe that more is more, that there needs to be a culture of something that can thrive. And that culture is starting to disappear. So for the groups that are remaining, like Southern Exposure, it becomes harder and harder to make a case for why what we're doing is important. Hmm.
It's never easy to make a living as an artist. You sort of pair the word struggling with artists. So in some ways, that's always been true. And yet, what fundamentally is different for you now in this city than perhaps 10, 20 years ago?
I believe there's a lot of frustration. People are feeling like giving up. I think, this is not news. It's escalating in its pace. For the last 5 years, quite a few and really important nonprofit organizations closed, starting in about 2008 at the height of the downturn. So I really think the story starts there with this recent trend, seeing groups kind of close year by year, New Langton Arts, Visual Aid, the Museum of Craft and Folk Art, all really key players in the cultural landscape here. Less opportunities for artists, less money for artists, less viable, affordable spaces for artists, less of a culture. And then you start to see people migrating away towards more opportunities. You know, on the other hand, there are a lot of healthy parts of the art community. There's a very, very vibrant art school community here. There's more than six MFA programs. There's a cultural history that's very deep. There's there's a lot of roots here. On the other hand, when those roots start to migrate, you know, you start to lose some of that.
So whether that it will become something that will accelerate that much further. Courtney Fink, Executive Director of Southern Exposure. Anthony Luzzi, from a business standpoint, are these all things connected? So is it artists are leaving, art organizations, as Courtney Fink was describing, closing? That in turn fuels problems for art dealers, along with, of course, the high costs of rent. All of these things are connected?
Oh, absolutely. I think one of the problems you have if we start losing the gallery structure we have, we lose representation of the artists, regional, which most in the city support, quite a few do. And then where do they go to find representation or to sustain themselves to continue to make art? So it becomes a domino theory here. It just falls one right after the other. The landscape is definitely changing dramatically, not just slightly.
How many of your colleagues are leaving or have been evicted? How many art dealers are there fewer now?
Well, it seems to be taking place primarily in the original gallery scene area, which is down there around Union Square and Geary Street. And we have about a half a dozen that have been displaced. Some of them have actually closed and they're out of the business.
And is that as simple as skyrocketing rents? Give me an example of the kinds of things that are taking place.
Well, it is. It has a lot to do with the rent because as a business for profit, you have a model that you have to adhere to. And you have the parameters that are necessary for you to survive. And when that becomes taxed to a large degree, you can no longer sustain yourself in the environment you're in. So you have to find an alternative. When you seek out into the community for an alternative that isn't there, you stand there going, what do I do next now in order to keep the door open? And then the consequences from the dealer's standpoint is he's not so much focused on trying to nurture his artist presentation. He's more concerned about how do I survive and what do I do, much like the artists themselves. I deal with many regional artists, local artists a lot I represent, and instead of having conversations with fellow artists about what their creative process and ideas are, they're talking about what are we going to do to survive, where can we move, have you heard of any places, what's going on.
And Lisa Ruth Elliott, what does that do to the artistic process itself? Even if art is always a struggle, if you feel worn down, as Courtney Fink was describing, a sort of sense of being discouraged, is it then almost antithetical to being able to be creative?
I think what we're seeing now is a lot of art is being made in response to this question around the struggle, around eviction, around this kind of attack on our community. And this means we're in a mono... We're kind of in a mono line of what the inspiration is. Before, we would be taking inspiration from a lot of different areas and exploring our own individual predilections and creativity. But now it really feels like it's a reaction, it's a response, and
tell me what it's meant
limited.
For you. How it's affected your own creative life, your own artistic life.
I have worked as a public artist. With artists like Mona Caron. I worked with Paz de la Calzada and other artists in the city. And I do my own installations as well. And what I see is a legacy is really leaving the city. I think there's a difficulty in hanging on to a through line, a thread. And I kind of liken it to a fabric that's being threadbare and kind of stretched apart. And the community that holds it together is being ripped slowly and taken in different directions. And those elements of community support each of our efforts and each of our inspirations and each of our expressions around our creative process.
Courtney Fink, when you got your eviction notice, not for Southern Exposure, your nonprofit, but for you, tell me what you felt and what went through your heart.
Yeah. Well, you know, I having lived here for so long and really dedicating my life to supporting artists in San Francisco, one wonders like, wow, you know, I cannot live in the place that I am making culture for. You know, that I sort of see myself as a cultural producer, as an arts advocate. And, you know, it's not just myself. It's so many people I know and so many of the people I work with, but for some reason it just became a lot more personal. You know, I'm definitely an optimist at heart and feel that despite having to move to the East Bay, you know, let's be honest, it's only 10 miles away and it's not going to stop me from doing the work that I feel like is very, very vital here right now. But it certainly made me sort of see the unsustainability of the work that I am trying to do and the work that organizations like Southern Exposure are trying to do.
Is there something different, though, about this? Because, you know, teachers could say the same thing. Cops could say the same thing. Any number of people in any number of professions could say, I'm priced out of San Francisco.
And it's happening to them, too. It's not just happening to artists, for sure.
So, but is there, I guess what I want to get at is the... Is there something more central, I guess, to what's going on in San Francisco that is central to what the city is if art is lost? Is there some way in which this should be viewed differently than the same phenomenon that's affecting so many people in so many professions? Courtney Fink.
Yeah. You know, I do. And you're right. It's not just about the art community. It's about a lot of communities going through this exact problem. I think the art community gets some attention because it tends to be one of the first things that starts to fall apart, right? But despite all of that, there's actually a ton of amazing work going on. And, you know, we're overwhelmed with demand by artists who need our help. I really think the question has to be turned around to not one of frustration and complaining, but to one of possible solutions. What are the models that we think can start to change what's happening? I think the art community truly needs to come together to have a conversation and at least try to agree on a few points. I think if we understand what we need and what we want, there are some really interesting models out there. I point to one recent organization that I started to get to know called CAST, Community Art Stabilization Trust. It's a really interesting model of helping organizations create cultural capital by buying their buildings through a nonprofit model and also helping other nonprofits relocate into specific neighborhoods of San Francisco that are open right now, specifically Mid-Market and Tenderloin. And that is a really good example of a positive, viable solution. It obviously still has challenges attached to it, but I'm looking to things like that right now.
A bit like, in some ways, like the Nature Conservancy buying up land to preserve it. This is a way of preserving those spaces. Is this conversation going on that Courtney Fink is suggesting, Anthony Lucia, between both artists and business people?
I think the conversation is going on, whether it's happening between artists and business to any large degree. I don't think so. I could be wrong, but I don't think so. And I do like the idea. I think Courtney's right on with trying to find a means by which to preserve this indigenous resource that San Francisco has, which is the cultural and artistic diversity we've been known for. Models, I feel, need to be constructed that would provide for that and subsidized in some way. Perhaps we're concerned about the influx of the tech industry into San Francisco and the cause of the rise in living here because of it. So how can we utilize that and turn it into a win-win situation where we can incorporate them into this process?
I want to get the voice of another artist to join in our conversation now. Eliza Barrios joins us. She is a San Francisco-based multidisciplinary artist. Eliza, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Your perspective on this in terms of what's being lost and whether you're pointing the finger at anyone for why this is taking place. The gallery owner, George Grefsky, said the other day, we live at the intersection of tech and greed. Is that how you see this?
Well, I mean, pointing the finger really doesn't help. I'm all about trying to find sort of a solution around this. And this is not new at all. It's actually hastened, though, within the last 5-10 years. But I'm not pointing the finger at that. I think that the thing is that we are finding way more agile ways to deal with this. Unfortunately, the reality is many of my peers, my artist friends have to move out because, and I do too, if anything would happen to me, but we're definitely being pushed out. So, you know, pointing the finger is not a solution.
Do you feel like people are paying attention? Do you have a sense that this issue is something that people are reacting to and with great concern, or ho-hum?
Oh, no, I feel like it is great concern. I feel like it's sort of a metaphor of what is happening to all the communities, not just the artistic community. So I definitely do feel like folks are reading up and being aware of it and conscious of it.
How do the rest of you feel about that, about the amount? I mean, this has gotten lots of attention, but attention is one thing, action sometimes another. And sometimes we sort of – it's just like, you know, I think San Francisco likes to see itself as being progressive and artistic and all of that. That doesn't necessarily mean that it is. What's your sense of sort of the way in which people are reacting to this and whether or not this is something that's really resonating with people?
I think that what's interesting is there's a worldwide interest. There's a lot of international press. And so I find that really encouraging because that means there's a spotlight on what's happening. And that might mean that there's some action taken, some pressure on our local lawmakers and decision makers and also our community to come together and make some solutions happen. However, I think there's a difference between creation and consumption. And I'm constantly trying to figure out the balance between that in my own life. But people come to San Francisco because of an artistic culture and they want to consume it and are not super interested in being part of the actual creation of it. And I think when that balance starts to tip the scale and there's more people here to consume culture than to actually create it, then you start and people who aren't concerned with the elements that go into the creation of it, you have a more consumer apathetic culture that actually is diluting what we actually have to offer in terms of the magic. And
I mean, part of what's changing now, I would think, is not dissimilar. That's what's changing in lots of other fields, changing newspaper business, book publishing, film. There's a struggle right now to figure out how to distribute and get work consumed, whether that's art or work of different sorts. Is that part of what has to happen, Courtney Fink, that you, in a sense, have to become that much more creative, not just about the work you do, but how that work is distributed and consumed?
Absolutely. In fact, I'm convinced that the reason Southern Exposure is still a very vital platform for non-commercial experimental artist practices, right? We're not buying or selling anything. We're really supporting the kind of work that you can't buy is because we're really open to change. And groups that don't evolve really quickly every year right now for the last, I would say, 10 years are not going to make it. I also feel like this has reached national news. This is dominating the conversation. This is something that gets talked about daily in social media, in national news platforms. I really do think it has reached a point where it's a big topic, but I believe people are still being reactionary. I think that in order to stay ahead of the change, the conversation has to change. And people have to start thinking about what are we going to do besides be frustrated? We have to come up with a different way of approaching it.
Eliza Barrios, your take on that. What are you going to do other than be frustrated? What are the specific things that you can do as an artist?
Well, you know, making work, still making work, showing that work does exist, the creative scene and the creative community. You know, we're agile enough. We can make this happen. And there are challenges put forth. But you know, I feel like the folks that I have been, my peers here in San Francisco, have been so supportive. And you're talking about what has this done to the community. I feel like it's bonded. Many collaborations are higher with collaborations that don't usually exist. There are connections that are being made with other artists that's making the bonds a bit stronger and the community a bit larger.
I know you're working on a video diary now with other local Filipino residents and about the displacement process. Mm-hmm. Is that part of what you're branching into as a way of telling this story and telling it perhaps in a different medium?
Yeah, that's a project I'm doing with the VEC, Veterans Equity Center, as well as Johanna, which is a Somcan youth, and bringing the two generations together who live in Soma. And Soma is being highly affected with what's going on in our city. And yes, using a medium that I'm more familiar with, which is projection, to create a messaging or some sort of archive to let the public know, because, you know, many people do, they are afraid of SOMA or at night or not, and they don't realize that people do live there. It's not just, you know, a place where hotels and conferences occur. People do live there.
Stay with us, Eliza Barrios. I just want to turn, though, for a moment back to Anthony Luzzi about how art is being consumed. I mean, is part of what has to happen for the art dealers is to find a way beyond bricks and mortar? Is there a way that art now has to be seen and viewed and consumed, just like the way many other media is being consumed now?
Absolutely. I mean, you have to diversify to exist. And there's been several models over the last few years. The art fairs are one as an example. The internet is another. And you have to integrate that in to the whole landscape of how to survive. The problem you wind up encountering is that what you want to continue to do in the city that you are operating your business is represent the talent that is coming here from emerging to mid-career. And your inability to mount those shows, to have the opportunity to give that exposure to those artists, now becomes jeopardized by the alternative models that are coming in. We were talking about it a minute ago. Same thing happened in the music industry when artists, musicians became independent and they started producing themselves. Technology afforded them the opportunity to record, and they started distributing out of the trunk of their car. And Napster came along, and disruptive technology, and the whole landscape, the whole thing changed. I think we're in that kind of transitionary point right now with the fine arts.
But is there something fundamental about art that has to be physical? Do you know what I mean, Courtney Fink? I mean, do you need an actual place where that's experienced as opposed to just having it be distributed somehow digitally?
I mean, I'm always going to argue for the real thing, you know, and especially with the kind of work that I represent, which is really about something else. It's not about consuming an object all the time. It's about an experience or a performance or something else. You know, the greatest asset we have is being able to come together, is the people, right? It's the people, it's the community. So absolutely, you know, that's the number one, you know, it's highly valued. And I don't think that the internet kind of experience of art can replace the real thing.
And Eliza Barrios, that sounds central to what you're trying to do too, is to, in some ways, transform this experience into something that unites community that much more.
Yes. I agree with Courtney. I mean, art, you need to experience it. That's the first and foremost bottom line. Also, creating community, bringing folks together that normally wouldn't come together, I think that's super important. And I think in some ways it's sort of the upside to what's going on now is, you know, again, I'm repeating myself, but communities are coming together, and that's super important to, well, at least to my creative process.
Eliza Barrios, a San Francisco-based multidisciplinary artist. Thanks for contributing your point of view to our conversation, Eliza. We'll continue this as we continue our series on looking at what it would mean to lose sort of the artistic soul of San Francisco as part of our Priced Out series as we continue to explore the high cost of living in the Bay Area. And we'd like to hear from you. We're going to take a short break. When we return, we'd love your participation in our conversation this morning. You can join us at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. You can also email us or tweet us or post your comments on our website as well. One listener has already written in, just cut to the chase. People should move to Oakland. Another says, I'm just looking for 300 square feet. More after this. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Our topic this hour, art, whether or not art is leaving the city and what that means for the city that everyone loves so much. It's part of our Priced Out series where we focus on the high cost of living in the Bay Area. For more on that, you can visit kqed.org/priced out. A new piece actually will be posted on that site later today about this very topic. We welcome your participation in our conversation. Join us at 866-733-6786. Here's some comments coming in so far. Technology is by definition a creative profession. And the notion that the city is being populated by soulless drones is patently false. Why can't technology be considered an artistic expression as well? Another writes, the city of Lawrence Ferlinghetti is also the city of Don Fisher. The city of Jack Kerouac is also the city of Charles Schwab. San Francisco wasn't a city just built by artists. It was also built by profiteers and opportunists. And another listener writes, it's the city, it's the people who are moving in that can afford the high rent that the galleries can't. Who can afford to buy original works of art? There ought to be a way that can be, that can help people buy, have buyers have a chance to buy, that the, so the galleries won't be able to move. Many more comments. We'll get to them as our conversation proceeds. Lisa Ruth Elliott, you wanted to offer a comment further about really what's at stake here.
Well, I don't want to be in a role of a whining artist of saying, oh, I can't stay in the city that I've given to. But I think what really is an issue here is a much larger question of why do artists exist and what role do we have in society? What role do we play? I think art offers possibility. That's what we're looking at. We're looking at a human experience. We're commenting on the human experience through creative expression. And if that sort of element of a society, it's a very key element. If that is drifting away or being lost or no longer welcome, you're losing a key element of how the rest of society functions. And I think that that is a really missing link in this conversation. It's not about the individual experience. Of course it is at one level, but that's not the only thing. I don't want any pity or misplaced compassion for my own experience. There are many people who are suffering right now in this, but I do think that I have a role, as Courtney was saying, as cultural producer. That's a key part of how a society, the fabric of society, holds together.
Lisa Ruth Elliott, one of the artists joining us in our conversation. We're joined now as well by Fred Turner, who is the director of the program in science, technology, and science at Stanford University. His latest book is The Democratic Surround, Multimedia and American Liberalism from World War II to the Psychedelic 60s. Fred Turner, thanks for joining us.
Good to be here.
I wanted to get your perspective on this. You had some interesting comments in an article that was published in the Guardian recently that it's also useful to look at this as a trend that has happened over time, and that just as artists may be pushed out at this point, in not so long ago, it was artists who were pushing people out.
Quite right. I think that the soul of San Francisco has never been singular. It's always been about diversity, and it's been a place where all kinds of different communities have washed up and roiled the surface. You know, Bohemians came into the North Beach and challenged the living space of working class Italians in the 50s. In the 60s, the hippies hit Haight-Ashbury and displaced a number of working class folks. And, you know, about that time and a little later, the Castro grew up in a neighborhood that was at one time working class Irish. And, you know, I wouldn't trade away those experiences at all, but I think that we live in a place where different communities come and go very, very rapidly, and that's part of what makes the city exciting.
So do you look at this current phenomenon as being just part of the natural evolution of something, and that we shouldn't really fret about the losses that we're hearing about in this hour this morning?
I think that would be too simple. I think that we need to manage the challenges. I think we've got a situation we've seen before. We've seen this, you know, around the year 2000 in the last tech boom. And we need to take advantage of the great wealth and the great creativity that's migrating into the city with the technology industry. You know, the model that I have in my head, it may sound hokey, but I think it really could work. The model that I have in my head is Renaissance Florence. You know, you have the rise of new intellectual industries, and you have the rise of great art in the same place at the same time, supporting one another.
What about that, Courtney Fink, the idea of sort of using the wealth that is moving into the city and capturing it, using it as a way to support art as opposed to seeing that as the enemy?
That is the golden question that gets asked in my life daily. And you know, I don't know if I have an answer to it, but I see, you know, honestly, I do see a lot of people supporting the arts. I think what we're really talking about is artists, right? And so, for instance, very large institutions in town are thriving. They're growing. I believe that that is possible because of the wealth. I think the community-based models, the smaller organizations, the striation has become very extreme. The gap in the middle is pronounced. It's small and large and not a lot else. So I think that really is the question. How do you connect that wealth to the smaller sort of on-the-ground grassroots efforts.
What about that, Anthony Lucy? Is there a way to sort of further that engagement? So, I mean, almost by definition, if you have people willing to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars more, as we've been reading about, for homes in the city, that means you got a little bit of discretionary income. One would think that there might be a way to sort of engage that with the art community.
Absolutely. That's the challenge. I mean, we as gallerists confront that on a daily basis, trying to get those collectors to become collectors, make them be a part of the model, is a real challenge. How do you get into making them be a part of it? That's a real question. Creating balance that we can have an equal distribution of the wealth and the art is really important. How do you go about doing that? Do we stage special events for them to come and participate in? Does the city create some kind of cultural environment for everybody to come to?
Let's get our audience engaged in this question. Patricia wants to comment on, I think, this very question. Patricia, go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, actually, I'm part of a group that's called Reengineering. And what we're trying to do is put people in conversation together. We're trying to put artists and technologists and tech workers and just like creative individuals across both of these fields in the same room, participating in a conversation, and from that, being able to facilitate like their own projects and their own conversations. And so there's a really active Facebook group that's also called Reengineering. And then we're doing a series of conversations that are intended to be, you know, as social as they are informative.
Patricia, thank you. Fred Turner, how do you further advance what Patricia is talking about and Anthony Luzzi is talking about? How do you sort of create the Medicis in what you would like to see as a new Florence?
Well, first, I want to thank Patricia for calling in. I'm familiar with the Reengineering Group, and I think they're doing terrific work. I think the first thing we need to do is slow down and give ourselves a little bit of time. You know, the great wall of technology workers moving north has only been moving north for about 2 years. And it took a while to build Florence. It's going to take a while to build a new kind of San Francisco and a new kind of Bay Area. I think that we need to build spaces in which people can come together and get to know one another. I think that's just fundamental.
How do you have time if you're being evicted? I mean, I hear what you're saying, but for the artist who's, you know, now doesn't have a place to live, it's hard to say, well, this will take time.
I totally understand that, and I think that evictions are something that are spreading across the city. And I think the greatest threat to the kind of San Francisco that we love is a threat that faces artists, but also faces other communities, working class communities of all kinds. And that's the threat to diversity. One of the ways that we could go wrong would be to go the way that Manhattan has gone and become an essentially wealthy island surrounded by creative spaces like Brooklyn. You know, we could go that way, and that would be unfortunate. To prevent that, the only thing I can see is direct engagement among the communities and perhaps to some degree some city involvement, city government involvement.
What about the city part of that? I mean, I don't think of artists being very good lobbyists, but maybe they are. And I mean, Lisa Ruth Elliott, do you see that as part of what happens, that you got to sort of do march on City Hall?
Oh, well, we can't leave it up to city decision makers to make the only solutions. We have to be working at all levels. And I think the example of 1049 Market was a really good example of how we can activate. 1049 Market is a live work space, not necessarily under that rubric, but where a lot of artists were living on Market Street. And 150 people received eviction notices, and there was a general outcry that this was happening, and it would have made a big dent into that. The mid-market's actual, I mean, this is being groomed as a theater arts district at the moment, and to displace artists in the midst of that was a deal breaker, really. And so you had supervisors and even Mayor Ed Lee coming in to comment on that and hopefully make some changes in policy to preserve some of those housing situations. And so that's a good example of a large group of people coming together and making.
Do you feel, Courtney Fink, that you have the ear of City Hall? I mean, is Ed Lee's city supervisor paying attention?
Not necessarily, but it doesn't mean that I couldn't. I think as an arts leader, I really need to work with my fellow arts leaders in order to foster this conversation. I really think the art community needs to come together right now. You know, leaders from larger arts organizations have certainly reached out. I don't think it's impossible. I do think, though, when you're really, really struggling to create a sustainable arts organization, it's very hard to also find time to have that kind of conversation.
So Fred Turner, I have an idea.
Okay.
You're the director of a program in science, technology, and society at a well-endowed institution, Stanford University. So why don't you do this? Why don't you encourage and sponsor this kind of conversation?
Well, in fact, we have been doing this and encouraging this, not in the city of San Francisco, because we are, you know, almost an hour south. But one of the features of our program that I think is most important is that we've actually engaged the arts extensively. You know, the Science, Technology, and Society program is currently the fourth largest major on campus, and it's a major in which we ask some 300 majors to think very hard about the arts and the role of the arts in their lives, and it's a core part of our curriculum. I think that's the kind of work that we can do on campus. It's very difficult for a whole host of reasons to get off campus, go north, and be active in the city on the ground where the action is taking place.
Yeah, no, I hear you. But, it is part of – if a lot of wealth comes out of Stanford, and a lot of these tech that tech wealth has its origins in that university.
Absolutely.
And so it's an interesting way to sort of make that transition perhaps to accomplishing what you say you'd like to see happen.
Yeah, I think over the long haul, one of the things that we need to do at Stanford and in the tech industry more generally is cultivate a sense of civic responsibility. You know, I study history, and in the 1950s, corporate leaders of a variety of industries also saw themselves as civic leaders. I'm not sure that we see that in the tech world today.
Yeah.
And I'd very much like to see that. And I think San Francisco is a test ground for what a world might look like if we can, in fact, get the barons of the new tech industries to support the kinds of civic initiatives and civic sensibility that characterized corporate leaders 50 years back.
You won't be surprised to know that all the artists around the studio are nodding their heads vigorously as you're making that comment. Stay with us. We're going to take some more calls. Stephen in Livermore is next. Stephen, go ahead.
Hi. I just want to suggest that I think you guys have something of an answer right in front of you, but unfortunately it seems like nobody's talking about it or pursuing it. The fact is that the term community is evolving. We're in the midst of one of the biggest changes in human history, where millions of people can come together instantly in virtual time, in virtual space, and people are choosing to view their art and interact with their art in different ways. You got the funding issue of the arts, the space and time issue of the arts, you got the artists. And you also have the future, which is that millions and millions of people are going to want to interact with art in a different way. And if you keep defining community as people coming together in real time and real space to view art, I think you're limiting your solution.
Stephen, thank you. Push back at that if you want to, Courtney Fink, because you were making the comment before, or I was asking you about that very question about whether or not you need physical community.
Yeah. You know, I'm not going to deny that the technology available to us has created immense tools for people to connect on new levels. But you cannot deny also that bringing people together to create work, it's just, you can't replace it. You know, you can't. It's like that, I think it's about value. Like, what is most valuable to people? And I think if you know, my job is to listen to artists and let artists lead my decisions towards creating cultural space for them. People need space to come together.
Can I comment on that as well? I'm engaged in a project at Berkeley Art Museum right now as a weaver, as one of my art mediums. And there's a show there called The Possible. And there are various studios that are happening in real time, and people can come and engage with them, ceramics, natural dyes, print shop. And what's really happening is this cross-pollination. And that doesn't happen in a vacuum of the internet. Yes, it's a great communication tool and it's a great place to showcase, but to be able to bounce ideas off and really engage together, like in this show, it's unparalleled.
Anthony Lucy, you wanted to comment on that as well.
Yeah, I think the key is engagement, because that's where the innovation takes place. And if you even look at the tech industry, if they didn't have one-on-one engagement, we wouldn't have half of the technology that we currently have. It's essential, because that aspect of art is what becomes redeeming and revealing, and it's really paramount to the process of creating art. I mean, that's where the innovation takes place. When you put that in jeopardy, you're starting to lose a tremendous asset, socially speaking, overall. And let me just go one thing real quick. I just want to go back to the idea of having the city be involved. I think it's essential that we get the city involved, if not directly, but even as a catalyst in some way, because they can control the terrain in a way that no other can. And I think that's paramount to getting this, going back to Fred's ideas. I think that's paramount to getting to a resolve for this.
Courtney Fink.
I was going to say, like, I really think that the rise of social engagement is a backlash to technology. And the reason you kind of are seeing this return to kind of people getting together to have conversations and weaving and these workshops is a direct result of people feeling really isolated as a result of technology.
Let's hear from Chris next in Vallejo. Chris, go ahead.
Hi. There is something going on in Vallejo right now that's amazing. These expatriate artists who are getting kicked out of Oakland and out of San Francisco are shaping Vallejo into a destination art city. There is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity right here right now. Main Street has all these empty storefronts, and people can buy gallery spaces for cheaper than they've been renting for in San Francisco. The gravitas of these established San Francisco galleries in Vallejo could completely transform, and they never have to worry about getting kicked out again because they can own the places.
Chris, thank you. Thanks for adding that in. This is really an interesting part of this. Fred Turner was mentioning a bit ago this question of we don't want to become Manhattan. It sometimes says that, you know, Brooklyn is to Manhattan what Oakland is to San Francisco, and maybe now Vallejo is to Oakland and so forth and so on. I mean, there's something sort of exciting about that. That this could be to the gain of places like Vallejo that have many other struggles as well. Lisa Ruth, what's your
question? Don't think that we haven't thought about it. There's a number of people who've definitely had Vallejo in the mix of conversation. Right. Sure, we could move somewhere else. But a lot of us have really strong roots here and have an investment in this place. And as Courtney was saying earlier, we have put a lot of time. And I don't even think it's that easy. If you have a home, why should one be asked to leave that home or even consider that that's a possibility? A home is where you are creative, where you do create. And I really will push back against that. There's another space that is just as good.
Yeah. Fred Turner, what's your reaction to that? You were talking before about this is part of what happens. People move in, push, you know, one group out, whether that's people moving into the Haight or to the Castro or to North Beach. Do you see that sort of the positive part of this, perhaps being that, you know, San Francisco's loss is Vallejo's gain?
I think that's definitely a possibility. I think the risk is that San Francisco in its 7x7 block becomes a monoculture, as in some ways Manhattan has. I remember when the Lower East Side was a diverse, artistic, multi-ethnic community. It's not that anymore. That's in Manhattan. And I would fear that parts of San Francisco could go that way as well. I want to touch on one other thing that came up earlier, too, and it's a tech industry challenge. You know, to become more civic-minded, I would argue that the tech industry needs to focus on life on the ground. One of the myths in the tech world is that we're building community in cyberspace, and so we don't need to attend to it quite as rigorously on the ground. And I think that's not the case. And I think that one of the things that we're encountering here with regard to the arts is a collision between a culture in which the virtual and the mobile are valued over the local and the grounded. And I think that that's a really important struggle that's going on in a lot of cities right now. And I think that the artists are on the forefront of the sort of local side of that battle. And we really need to focus on that. And the tech world in particular needs to ask, how can we dig into the communities that we're a part of and help improve them, not simply build new spaces for mobile communication in the ether?
Fred Turner, Director of the Program in Science, Technology, and Society at Stanford University. Tom joins us next in San Francisco. Tom, go ahead.
Hi. Thank you so much for having this on your show today. And I just wanted to call in and share a little bit from the city's perspective and what we're doing to mitigate some of the challenges we're seeing in terms of the rising cost of living.
And sorry, this is Tom DeCaney at the San Francisco Arts Commission. Tom, go ahead.
Yes. So they're actually right now before the Board of Supervisors is a $2 million supplemental to enact some recommendations from the nonprofit displacement working group. So we're working broadly across the nonprofit sector in the arts and culture arena, particularly to look at what kind of solutions we see that could help nonprofits stay in our city and remain a vibrant part of the city. And I appreciated Courtney's reference of the Community Arts Stabilization Trust, which I think is a really exciting potential model to create a secondary market so we can build ownership in the arts and culture sector, because we know this cycle will continue either in this current cycle or to repeat. We saw this in 1999 and 2000, and the city responded then with a $1.5 million allocation. And the board will be hearing a supplemental allocation of $2 million for the arts this Wednesday.
And Tom, we were talking earlier about whether or not, you know, this has the attention of City Hall. Does it?
Absolutely. Affordability is Mayor Lee's number one priority. I've been given that directive in my role as the director of the San Francisco Arts Commission, and that pertains to so many communities, for working families, for teachers, for people in our early childhood development care. I mean, this is a real issue for our city across many sectors, and it's particularly hit artists hard and our nonprofit community hard. And as a city, we need to work both on public solutions, but also work with our private partners. And I just want to echo that challenge to those people who've benefited from emerging wealth. This is your chance to get involved and to make sure that you're responsible for what you've benefited from and being a part of the solution.
Tom, thanks. Thanks for adding that into our conversation. Here's an email from a listener writes, how about tech companies subsidizing work-live housing for both artists and young techies so that they're all living together? Could be good public relations, good social results, and good cross-pollination. Fred Turner, what do you think?
I think that's a terrific idea, and I think it points to something that's an opportunity for the tech companies and for the city. You know, I've been distressed by the Google Bus's use of public resources at relatively low cost. I would love to see leaders from tech firms and the city come together to precisely bolster public services that also integrate tech folks more closely into the communities where they live and work.
Here's a comment from Andrew, who writes in, I'm a 23-year-old playwright based in San Jose. When I graduated from UC San Diego 2 years ago, San Francisco absolutely excited me with its decades-long tradition of art and culture. However, it quickly became apparent to my fellow art graduates and me that it was impossible to both live in the city and make art for a living. 2 years later, we all live elsewhere or with our parents. The artist's excursion issue ultimately not only affects the current state of art, but the future of the city. Young artists now, more than ever, have no ability to work in the city they once dreamed of. Courtney Fing?
It's really such a question in my mind. How are artists coming out of school surviving here? How can you even afford an apartment here? What does it mean to make work here? Places like Southern Exposure, there aren't enough of them. You know, there's a good group of organizations out there, but honestly, if I were coming into the world today, right now, I would have that exact same question.
Where would you go?
I really don't know. I mean, I'm actually from Los Angeles, California, and there's a huge exodus of artists who've moved there in the last few years from my community, who feel like the art scene is much more vibrant. There's a lot more possibility. Space is more affordable, but it's still in the mix of a major art center.
And probably nothing harder for San Franciscans to hear than L.A. is better.
Right. Well, actually, it's funny. Like 15 years ago, I think people might have, turned over that comment. But now I think people have realized that it's not wrong.
Here's another comment from someone within the city that I'd be curious to hear your comments about. There are other neighborhoods in San Francisco that would love to see artists create a presence. 35 years ago, I was priced out of Noe Valley and moved to the Excelsior. Here, rents are cheaper. There are many empty storefronts. Artists, welcome. Is that part of what also has to be thought about, that it can't just be sort of the inner part of San Francisco, that there's the Excelsior or the Avenues or wherever?
Yeah, of course.
I think it goes back to the model they were just talking about with Vallejo. You have the concentric rings that keep expanding out and out and out. And yeah, I think there's some relevance to that. But let's look at it from a gallery standpoint, commercially speaking, you have to be able to attract collectors and buyers there in order to support your business model to be able to provide for the artists. So this becomes an additional challenge that you have to take into consideration.
Arkady is next in San Francisco. Arkady, go ahead, please.
Hi. Yes, guys. I wonder if the fact that it seems to be a dramatically declining interest in the arts and the people who work 80 hours a week in finance and in tech, they're not nearly as interested in the arts, and they seem to be much more interested in happy hours, in drinking, in high-end dining. And that's why we have so many more galleries replaced with expensive restaurants and bars. And if that's the case, how do we reinvigorate that interest? Is there a strategy to make people want to spend that discretionary income on art?
Yeah,
rather than eating and drinking.
Great last question, and let's use that as a way to get some additional final thoughts. Fred Turner first. Are you with us, Fred, still? Yeah.
Yep. I would really take issue with that. You know, arguably the largest festival connected to the tech world is Burning Man. Whether you think the art out there is good or not, it is a festival focused on the making of art, in which up to 40,000 technologists participate every single year. So I think technologists are deeply interested in art, and I think we need to find the social structures that help integrate their interest in the arts with the arts that are engaged and engaging in San Francisco.
Anthony, Lucy, last thoughts on creating both interest in the arts in a way that can support the art that we like to think of as being so central to what San Francisco is all about?
I think there's got to be an integration, an education between the artists themselves and the capital that's out there to support them. I think that's missing right now, and that's what's jeopardizing the gallery environment. And if that starts to decline even further, you lose the outlet for representation of the artists, and now it becomes even more problematic.
Yeah, Courtney Fink.
Arts education. That is, we're seeing a generation coming up where arts education was devalued. It wasn't a part of people's primary education oftentimes, and we're really seeing the impact of that. When that's not taught, when that's not a part of people's lives, when the culture is taken out of that environment. And I'm a huge arts education advocate. It's a lot of the work that I do at Southern Exposure. We work with youth, and it's so important to kind of not forget that that is one of the main reasons why this could be happening.
Lisa Ruth Elliott.
I guess my final comments are that new is not necessarily or always better. I think there's a lot of us who've been doing work for a long time who have a lot to contribute, and it may not actually be in the realm of technology that can respond in also just as agile ways to our current predicament.
I want to thank you all for this fascinating, interesting conversation about the future of San Francisco, what it will be like, what it will look like, how art will continue to be cultivated here. Fred Turner joined us from the program in Science and Technology and Society at Stanford. Earlier, we also heard from Eliza Barrios. Lisa Ruth Elliott was here along with Anthony Luzzi, Courtney Fink. Thanks all very much for being part of our conversation this morning. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Amanda Supai is our engagement producer, and our senior editor is Dan Zoll. I'm Dave Iverson, and this is Forum on KQED.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.